Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 114. And we are here with three co-hosts tonight, myself, Stephen Zimmer, and Daniel Dark, and Michael West. So greetings, gentlemen, and welcome.
Greetings to everybody. Hopefully everybody's having a great day today. You doing all right over there, Mike?
Yeah, so far so good.
Michael's probably been chilling all day in his big easy chair, enjoying the good life, and, you know, doing Michael West things.
Still recovering from Infinity War, but other than that, I'm all right.
I'll see.
Well, you know, when you're multi-millionaire, self-sufficient and everything, you don't have to worry about it, you know, like Mike does, you know.
Yeah, I wanted to see that. I really wanted to see that, but oh my God, yeah, it's been this last week's been a blur. But I do hope in a week or two to finally find a window to catch up. I heard it was good. Is that spoiler free, of course, Michael? But what was your take on the new one?
Spoiler free. It's not a Marvel movie. It's the Marvel movie. seeing all these characters that you've seen in their own franchises and even to a lesser extent in the previous Avengers movies, but to see the entire Marvel universe, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, everybody all together on screen and to interact with one another, that's just a real joy. And then there's Thanos. And, you know, Marvel in the past has, up until like the last year or so, they always had a problem with their villains in that their villains were either just, you know, caricatures, just, I am evil, I will take over the world, you know, kind of, you know, evil for evil's sake kind of caricature villain, or they were a dark mirror to the individual heroes. You know, it's like, you know, I'm Iron Man, so I'm fighting against somebody who has a metal suit, but they're using it for evil. Or, you know, I'm Doctor Strange, so I'm a wizard, and you're a dark wizard, and here we go. You know, it's just, it's always been that the villain and the hero, the only difference between them really is just their philosophies. But, I mean, their powers, you know, were pretty, you know, equal. But with this, you know, Thanos, they really make him a threat very, 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 very early in the movie. And not only a threat, but this is basically his movie. I mean, they go about making him a fully developed character. And this movie, you know, you don't want him to succeed, but it's basically his quest. You know, it's his movie. And he's going about doing what he needs to do to accomplish his goals. And they do a really good job of making those goals well-defined and making you, you know, not agree with his methods, but agree with what, you know, or at least understand why he came to the philosophy that he currently has. So they, you know, I was really impressed with the writing in this one, you know, the ability to take a villain and to elevate them above the, you know, megalomaniacal person in a lair, you know, and really, really make Thanos the Darth Vader of the Marvel universe. And you know, people have been comparing this to Empire Strikes Back, and I think that's a very fair comparison. I think this goes further to the dark than Empire ever did. This is probably the darkest big budget movie I've ever seen.
Wow. Bold words from Michael West. How about that? That's awesome. Well, I know that our mutual friend Eric Jude's been bouncing off the walls about this movie since I think he and Kylie saw it Sunday. So I have heard similar comments about it from a number of people, and definitely Empire Strikes Back is one of my all time favorite kind of dark edged films. So that piques my interest if you say it's even goes broader than that. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
And the thing is, it's like, it's not, I don't think I've ever had a movie experience where you hear the audience, cheer and laugh and sometimes when the movie is over, mm-hmm. They applaud or whatever. But I have never seen an audience, not even at a horror movie. I mean, the only thing that maybe comes close is the ending of when I saw people actually physically scream and run out of the theater at the very end of Paranormal Activity. But this is the first time I think I've ever seen people just in their seats, like in just shaking. People were shaking, people were crying, people were walking around just like a deer in the headlights, when it was over. And I kudos to everybody involved with this movie that they can take a superhero movie and just make everyone just feel so much.
Very cool. Very cool. How do we follow that up? Oh, geez.
Well, my short story, Ave Santani.
Is out.
Is now readily available. It's readily available. And not only that, for two solid weeks, it was in the Amazon top 100. So,
yeah.
And it's still been there kind of off and on. But I can't thank my faithful readers enough for their support and for making this a huge success. And I hope they're enjoying it. I've already heard, gotten messages from people who read it who maybe not had the same experience as Infinity War, but they were affected.
Or maybe they did. You never know.
Maybe they did.
But since the last Friday, between last show and this show is when your new one did come out, and
right.
Excellent, excellent tale. And I might, mention again, it was voted one of the top 10 horror stories of 2016 on the Predators and Editors Readers Poll. So yeah, it's definitely one that has been previously acknowledged, and it's the first time it's available direct. So that is awesome. That is awesome. And tonight, let me give a quick shout out. It looks like Kenzie Michaels is in the chat room. She's leading the charge in there. And we will have a fantastic author guest coming up in just a couple of moments, which I'm going to let Daniel actually do a little bit of the intro on and guide us into this, because it's a very special author guest who's coming aboard tonight. But I would be remiss if I did not mention that Imaginarium announced our guest of honor today, and it is the wonderful Robin Peterman. And she is a New York Times and USA Today best-selling paranormal romance and romance author who is just fantastic. And I mean, she's a perfect fit for the Imaginarium atmosphere and vibe that we have. And attendees are going to absolutely love her. And I definitely encourage you to check out. I mean, she's got an extensive catalog of releases. Robin Peterman is really a top-notch author who really, knows the business side of the indie publishing world well, and she's going to be just a fantastic guest of honor for us, and I couldn't be happier that she, accepted our invitation, and we finally were able to go public today, and so that's cool. Yeah, we got a good one. Not just a good one, a great one. And so our fifth anniversary is shaping up to be definitely, I think, our strongest lineup we've ever had. So it's really, really looking good. So that's cool. And And so I don't know if Daniel had I think Daniel and Michael both had seen that, got to see that announcement earlier today. But
yeah, it
is good news. Yeah. So that's pretty much what I'm on my end. I mean, like I said, I'm just this week has just been a blur. A lot of crazy stuff.
Don't you have a new novella out? Or
I will
two?
Friday. Friday, Blood of a Queen. Yeah, the new Raiden Valkyrie novella will finally be out, and it's part of that new batch of novellas that I've got coming out at a pace of almost about one a month, and it's a really good standalone tale, real dark edge. It's got a real dark sorcery element, and I'll give a little hint, no, without giving away too much. It does have a vampiric element, but I'll just leave it at that. And so it's a good tale set in kind of like a area that's inspired by ancient Persia a little bit. So it's a different environment than readers have seen Raiden in so far. And so it's kind of got something really new. So that's always fun to go play in her world. So yeah, it's coming up on Friday, and I'll be in VV, Indiana for, at the Community Art Center of Switzerland County for a really cool May the 4th be with you event that they're having there with a number of artists. And they're going to have a lot of showcases of art at the gallery, and I'm going to be an author guest there. It's going to be really, really cool. So really stoked about that. But without further ado, I'm going to let Daniel do the introduction of our guest here, because we've got a great one for you tonight, folks. And so Daniel, take over, and then we will bring our guest aboard live.
Well, very good. If you are into spy and espionage and thrillers, and you have not read any of this next guest works, you are missing out. I met him first off in Killer Nashville several years ago, and was so impressed with him that he is actually one of the ones that I actually had as a beta reader for my Knife's Tale. And if you look on the back of that book, you will see an excerpt from a review from Knife's Tale from him. This is the one and only Mike Pettit. I hope you're here with us, Mike, and we will get down to some very interesting talks tonight. Welcome Mike.
Hey, gentlemen, thanks a lot for having me. I wasn't sure whether I was on or not. I was sitting here saying, Tokyo, Tokyo, this is Mike. So, no, you guys are coming in loud and clear. Hey, I appreciate you inviting me on the show tonight. Daniel is a kind of a scary guy. The first time I met him, I'd never seen anyone with a handlebar mustache and a high hat on. I started calling him Sir from the first time I met him. But yeah, it's been a nice relationship with Daniel. I read his book, Knife's Tale, and I didn't sleep for 3 days. I literally read that thing backwards and forwards. But here again, I appreciate you guys having me tonight. I'm not too familiar with what your format is. I've been on a lot of other blog shows, and it's kind of a freewheeling thing, but I'm open for anything you want to throw at me, or you tell me what you want, and I'll provide it.
Well, I know that you are very heavily into self-publishing, Mike. Give some people some of the new stuff that you have just self-published and gotten out
all
there
right
to the world, where they have an idea of what you actually have to offer them.
Okay. I've gone the same road as so many other indie authors, indie publishers, where early on I tried the traditional route and I was just, you know, hitting a brick wall. And one day I finally said, why am I doing this? Why am I trying to go through an agent to get to a publisher that might publish a book when I can do it myself? And that was about 8 or 9 years ago. And that's when Amazon Kindle was first starting out. So I thought, well, what the heck? I'll just try it myself. And so 33 books later, I love Kindle. They love me. They pay on time. It's a great relationship. I attend four or five conferences a year where I speak about the benefits of being an indie author and a self-publisher. The striking thing at these conferences are that there are so many people, first-time authors, first-time writers, that have their baby, their child, their work of art, but they don't know what to do with it after they write the end. They don't know what the next step is. So I spend a lot of time in these seminars and these conferences explaining to them that when you finish writing that book, that's just the beginning of the work, because next comes the marketing. And it's almost a full-time job in itself. You can make money as a self-published author, good money, but it is a job. And like I said, I've got 33, 34 books, three or four different series, different genres. Work 6-7 hours a day writing. I'd spend 4 or 5 hours promoting on all the social platforms. I don't spend a lot of money on advertising because I don't need to. I have 4 or 5 Facebook pages where they're maxed out at 5,000 people on each one. And so when I boost something, when I put a promo out about one of my new books or even an old book, you know, with the reach that it has, meaning that how far it goes out is, you know, like 250,000 people. And so there's no magic to it at all. It's just really just basically getting out there, getting your face known, your name known, and then follow with your books. Most, really a very important thing for me that I found was that the people, your reading base, have to know who you are. Not necessarily your works. Like, everybody knows Michael Connelly and James Patterson, but can you name their latest book? Maybe some of the people can, but you know he's a good author, and you know his genre. So the key to an all-around success is to get your face known. You're the brand. I'm the brand, Mike Pettit, and my books are my product. And to that end, I will put my face next to every book that I put on the social platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat. I'm on every place where I can put my name. I'm out there, LinkedIn, and so that's what you do. You start going to these shows, talking to other authors. I usually don't spend a lot of time talking with other authors. I'd rather be talking to my customers. But it's good to know what the industry is doing. So I do go to the shows. I do listen to what's happening out in the world. So it's like a job. And it has to be treated like a job. You have to be diligent. You have to be disciplined. But you can make some good money, no doubt about it. You know, there's so much market share out there for all of us that write. And a lot of us are making a living, a good living. Some people don't sell anything, but that's not their fault. They just don't know what to do. How do they go that next step? I would prefer just to write and nothing else. But if I did that, then I wouldn't be selling books. And my wife has gotten kind of used to the royalty checks every month. So anyway, that's kind of a nutshell of what I do and how I do it. I know I left out a lot. There's a million things that can be said on every one of those points. But do you guys have any specific questions that you'd like to ask?
Well, I noticed that you are primarily fall under the action thriller genre. You also have done Westerns, and you also have 2 self-help books as well. And as far as genres go, what genre kind of was your original passion, and then when did you start expanding into other territory as a writer?
Yeah. My first genre was suspense thriller with my John Locke series about a which is a tired theme, but an old drunk lawyer that works the halls of the down at the courthouse, and he gets tied up with this. He lives in a one room apartment over a Chinese takeout, and he gets to know the Chinese family below, and it comes out, turns out that the owner of the Chinese takeout is a triad member, a dragon in the triad, but he's hiding. So anyway, they become friends, and then all hell breaks loose. And so that was good for like 7 books. And I started, it's really funny. I was taking this art class. I retired. I had some health issues. I retired. I was just sitting around waiting to die. I thought, well, I think I'll sit down and write. Well, that year, I wrote 5 books. And I'm talking to, 100, 115,000 word suspense thrillers. And I just never stopped. And fortunately, it was on the time period when Kindle was first taking off. And so people were buying the heck out of them. And I made a ton of money. Well, not a ton, but enough. And I had taken this, my character, John Locke, and he had been hurt so much that I couldn't possibly put him in another book. I mean, I've stabbed him, broken every bone in his body, shot him, tattooed him, cut him. He just couldn't stand another book. So I changed over to my Jack Marsh book, my Key West series. And I've got 10 books in that series. I'm working on the 11th one now. And it's an action-adventure, sea story, sea adventure in the Caribbean. And it's really been good to me. I lived down in the Keys for 12 years, so I know the area. I know the people and everything. So that, you're supposed to write what you know. And when I did the John Locke books with the Chinese triad, I had spent my career living and working in Hong Kong and China, 30, 35 years. So I know the Chinese, so I knew what to write, their personalities and so forth. And then I did 3 Westerns, which I really, really loved, doing the research kind of post-Civil War, right after the Civil War, days after the Civil War, about a fellow by the name of Travis Ford traveling home through the South and war-torn South, and it's just really a good story. It's called Yankee Gold, and then I did Yankee Guns and Yankee Horses. But that Western category, there's like 10 people that own that category, authors, and to try and get in there and make money was just too hard, so I backed out. I'm sure you guys know that in all of the fiction genres on Amazon books and Kindle books, the number one selling genre is romance. And I don't know anything about romance. So at one time I partnered up with a lady that was on Facebook, and she helped me write one of my Key West books. And in hindsight, I don't know that it really added anything to it, but it cost me like 8 months because you're writing with someone else that is as egotistical as yourself, so nothing ever gets done. So I stopped writing with co-authors, but I'm sticking with the Key West series now. I have written other books. I did a couple of Harold Robbins-type books. I did some assassin books, Damien. I can't remember his name, that kind of flopped. Good stories, but they just didn't go anywhere. Too many assassins out in the world, in the writing book world. So I've found a tight niche, sea stories, action and sea adventures. It's crowded. It's a crowded field, but all of our genres are crowded. You guys know that as well as I do, that, man, you put a book out there, the competition is really, really heavy, and we're all fighting for the same, open to buy dollars, the same discretionary dollars. And if you're not on if you're not talking to your reader base, somebody else is. I wrote a book about 6-7 years ago, called Indie Author Bootcamp, Marketing 101, and what I did is I just used the basic selling technique techniques you can learn from any sales class, you know, the five steps of selling. But my real motive was to make $1 million, because there is an author, his name is John Locke, and I didn't use his name for my series because of this, but he was the first million bookseller on Kindle. And so what he did, he was the first one, and he's lauded for that, and for being the first million bookseller. So he wrote a how-to book, how to do it, and he sold 1 million of those. So I thought, well, darn, I'm going to sell 1 million books. So I wrote this how-to book. It was mainly for the dollars, for the money, but it sold good. But I didn't make $1 million off of it. Selling and marketing books is just basic business. You know, anyone that has any experience in selling a product, a commodity, can sell books. It's a tough business that we're in. It's a changing business, as you fellas know. I go to these conferences, and oh my gosh, all the big guys are there, and the agents are there, and you know, I'm like this, I'm like the redheaded stepchild. Nobody wants to talk to me because I'm an indie author. I'm not a real author, and so I usually go toe to toe with a couple of people, you know, and I've made this this reputation now where, you know, I can go into a conference room with a seminar going on, and half the room, you know, hey, there's Mike. And the other half, they kind of dust their feet off and sneer at me. So, but I'm a strong proponent of indie writing, indie authors. There's a heck of a lot of people that fail at it, okay? But they're out there because Kindle allows them to publish. Anyone can publish anything on their platform. And it's very, very it's a crowded field. So if you can get through all the minutia with your book, and like a few months ago, Mike, I think you were talking about issuing a novella in the next couple of weeks or so. You know, you know as well as I do that, I mean, if you're not in the top 100 the next first few days, you're not gonna sell any. And if you're not in the top 20 after 4 or 5 days, then it's going to slowly disappear. You know, you might sell a few. And I have no idea what your sales track record is. I'm not trying to be a smarty pants or anything. I'm just talking as a businessman to a businessman. I put out what I thought was a really cool book. It was like a Harold Robbins adventurer or the Carpetbaggers. And that thing flopped. I mean, and it was, you know, 100,000-word book. It had all the elements that it needed. It had, you know, lust and love and betrayal and all the cool things. And funny enough, it was number one in sales in India, but not in the U.S. The U.S., I mean, it's like number 10,000 or something on the on the book list. But the Indians loved it because they liked Harold Robbins and Sheldon. So they liked that. So, you know, I promoted it as a Harold Robbins type book, and they snapped it up. But here in the U.S., I couldn't give the darn thing away. And I don't know, I'm kind of rambling. I apologize.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to hear from an author that does it right in the indie world. And something we talk about a lot on the show is the fact that when you say indie author, I mean, you've got a huge spectrum. You know, the ones that just basically just throw up a first draft manuscript because it's so easy to get something on Kindle. And then you have the ones like you that treat it right, where they treat it like a publishing company where they are their roster of authors. And you do it across the board. I mean, one look at your Amazon page for me, I mean, just told me where you are, because your covers, I mean, just phenomenal job of branding and the look and style of your covers. That alone is something you can see the differentiation between the two ends of the spectrum just in that alone. And yeah, kudos to you on that. And it probably gets more into your discussion on branding, but yeah, I mean, just yeah, you've got it. I mean, for sure.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I do. You know, because I've got to admit to you that I was in one of the, in my working life, my real life, I was in one of the hardest consumer product businesses you could ever dream of. I was in the toy business. I manufactured and marketed toys. And with children, man, you've got less than a tenth of a second to get their attention. So, you know, after spending 17, 18 years with Mattel Toys, I moved to China, to Hong Kong, and lived there and set up my own company with a Chinese partner and started selling toys to McDonald's for Happy Meals and, you know, a whole slew of retail lines to Walmart and the big box companies. So I know all about packaging. I know all about pitching the books or pitching the product. And so, yeah, so that was a blessing. I've been blessed with a lot of on the ground, boots on the ground, learning how to do this stuff. So you compare that to, I don't know, someone that retires. Gosh, you know, I've always wanted to write a book. And they write a halfway decent book, and then they say, "Well, this is going to be a bestseller. You know, I'm going to be on whatever show on TV." And it doesn't happen, and then they're disappointed. But meanwhile, it might be a good book, and his family enjoys it, and his friends enjoy it, but it's still out there cluttering the people that want to make a living at this and have a good product and know how to market and sell themselves and their product. I'm not taking away from those people. Everyone has the right to publish whatever they want. You just have to, you know, be an open field runner and look for an opening. You know, be very, very conscious of who your audience is. Like my audience, I know who they are, and that's who I go for. I love night shift workers, truck drivers. You know, long-haul truck drivers, military, retired military, blue-collar workers that have a few bucks to write a quick or to read a quick novel. You know, I don't try to get, you know, brain surgeons and, you know, teachers or what music majors or anything like that. I go straight for my reading base, and that works, you know. And so my approach from a marketing standpoint and a branding standpoint is that, knowing my audience, I will post on these different platforms two or three topics non-related to my books about something that would be of interest to them. You know, like if it's, I might write something about, you know, trucking, or I might write something about the war for the military. And then I'll hit them with one of my books. You know, promotion on a boost on one of my books. And so that's my strategy, a very basic marketing strategy. And you just keep doing that, keep doing that, keep doing that. And then next thing you know, your reading base is promoting your books for you, telling other people about them. And in the meantime, you make good friends too. I'm real good friends with a lot of my readers. You know, they send me ideas about, you know, different characters, or what'd you do with this guy, or whatever happened to him. One of my books, I forgot that I killed this guy, like, in chapter 4. So I got a letter from a man, from a reader. He said, so what happened to Max? You killed him in chapter 4, but he never said where you put the body or anything. I said, oh, shit. excuse the French, but... you know, so I just left it that way. I never went back to change it, but, you know, that your base, they become your biggest champions. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. rely on email lists. You know, I personally have never been good at getting an email list. It's good, I guess. And a lot of other authors will tell you that's the only way to go. But I don't know. Everyone has a way that they do it. I will tell you this, that if you know what you're writing about and you have your audience, you've got them pinpointed, who reads your books, and you promote yourself, you brand yourself, and you promote your books, you will make a very nice living. You can... You know, I'm not talking James Patterson, who's got $500 million in that he's made in his lifetime of writing, or Michael Connelly or some of the others, but you don't need that much money, you know? I'm doing pretty good. I have no complaints.
Absolutely. And as far as your pace, I'm sorry, like I said, I have not gotten to look into the frequency at which your books come out. About what kind of pace are you on? Because it sounds like you have a heck of a good writing schedule, 6 to 7 hours a day. So I'm guessing
right,
you have a pretty prolific output.
I do. What I found is that that in the old let's call it pre Kindle. You know, there's a very set formula for word count for books. A lot of people go by pages. You can't go by a page because it's meaningless. You have to go by word count. And there was a very strict formula that the editor or the publishers would use in New York. And, for example, if it was a Western, it had to be between 60 and 75,000 words. If it was a romance, it could be 70 to 90,000 words. If it was an action thriller, I don't know, Mutiny on the Bounty, it had to be 100 to 115,000 words. Well, with the invent of the computer, the platform, people are going more and more, their businesses, they're at home rather than an office, so they have more time but to read, but they don't have that much time. People fly on airplanes. So what I've done is I've cut my books down to 60 to 70,000 words, no matter what the genre. Okay, I put them on my sweet spot price wise on Kindle is $2.99, and you make $2.06 royalty off each sale. Someone gets a 60,000 word book, they can read it on a flight from New York to L.A. Maybe that night or whatever. And it's perfectly legit, you know. Instead of doing the old 100,000-word books, I can do two books now, you know,
great,
in the same time period. So I like to do four books a year, and it depends on, like with the Key West, I'm writing one now. I've got 10,000 words into it. I'm committed to having it out by July 1st. I don't know if I'm going to make it or not, because now between now and then I've got a show I've got to go to. So, I try for a minimum of three for sure books.
I will have to get that. My birthday is July 2nd, so it's you're just in time for my birthday. So that is going on. I'll have to go on my list.
I'll shoe one over to you. It's actually a good book. I'm really enjoying writing it. But I tried comedy, and I failed at that miserably. I thought, well, heck, I can write some, you know, humor books, and that didn't go very well. But I dropped that immediately, just like I did on my Westerns. I wrote three Westerns. When I saw they weren't selling, I just backed out. Just no. I mean, it's like eating your children, right? I love those three books, but I've backed out. I don't do any promotion on them. I don't do anything because I can't sell a Western. Key West sea stories, Caribbean stories is a hot genre right now. My competition is really, really tough, real stiff. And each of us, we fight for every dollar, every customer. I mean, it's just like any retail store. You know, like you go down to four corners of any street in America, and one corner is a McDonald's, the other is Burger King, the other is Carl's Jr., and the other is Crystal's. And what are they doing to compete for that same dollar? You know, so it's just clever marketing and so forth.
But you've got depth, though, because you've got, like you said earlier, you mentioned that you write what you know, and that's another thing that we try to emphasize often as we can on the show for the newer authors that are listening. But you, you're a Caribbean Sea diver, and you've lived there. And so I imagine, you know, like your books resonate because you can bring a lot of authenticity to your narrative that others may not, you know, who are just doing it by research only. That's got to help.
Right.
Yeah.
It does. You know, you've got to, you know, you have to write about what you know, you know. I mean, I would never try and sell a bottle of whiskey to a teetotaler, you know. He's not going to buy it or she's not going to buy it. So I'm not going to try and sell a murder mystery. It's kind of like cozy mysteries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in cozy mysteries, there's always a cat or a bird, and you don't dare hurt any pet. And, you know, they're very soft, but God, it's a huge market. And, you know, I was at a seminar here recently where it was, they were talking about cozy mysteries. And they're mostly women that write these. And they are so tuned in. You're like, most of the protagonists, they own a bakery. You know, so it brings in characters into their store, and the person that owns the bakery is usually the heroine. And so it's a very, very simplistic formula, but man, it works. And darn, those women make a lot of money. They just make a ton of money.
We know several, you know, that do. Yeah.
And so, you know, I even thought about doing a cozy, but I don't know anything about cozy. I only know kill and maim, you know. So I would kill the cat for sure. That'd be the first thing you go with, the cat. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a business. I'm going to the Killer Nashville show in August. And I'm going to have put a couple of books in for some of their awards. I don't know that they would even come close to winning anything, but it gives me bragging rights. This is key,
right,
too. If you have a book and you send it in, you send in a book to every awards opportunity that you can, because then you can have the bragging rights saying, this book, my book, is up for an award. And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may not win,
yep,
but it gives you legs. It gives you some notoriety. Whether we like it or not, and very few people realize it, we are in show business. You know, this is a lot of smoke and mirrors that we have to do. We're not on the pointy end of the stick. Those are the actors, you know, in the cinema, but we write the stories. So we are in showbiz. We are in the industry. You know, we're not acknowledged so much as so, but man, if you can get a book option, and I've had books out for options for TV shows, movies. I've talked to production houses, and I've always come close, but I haven't yet. I came very close once, but it would have killed me if I took them up on it. It'd been too much work. There's opportunity beyond just writing the last paragraph and typing in the end, because it should read the beginning, because that's where, here's my book, here's my baby, what am I going to do with it? And that's where it's also the fun part, too, you know. Everyone wants to write a book, but very few people do. And those of us that do are proud of it. And we like the notoriety of it, the celebrity of being an author. So it's fun. It's fun, especially if you sell some. It's really fun.
And you mentioned different formats. One question that has come into us from the chat room, by the way, they're loving your discussion tonight. And author Kenzie Michaels asked about audiobooks and your experience with them and how many of your books are available as audiobooks. And I mean, if you could talk a little bit about that, that'd be wonderful.
Okay, sure. Audiobooks, I have 6 audiobooks out of my 33. And there's 2 reasons I have not pursued them. One, I can't seem to find the audiobook audience. I know it's there. I just don't know how to find it. I mean, I've joined audiobook clubs and all this other stuff, Man, I had a great narrator, a great reader. He's a broadcaster for Voice of America up in Virginia. Great voice, but you know, I've sold a few hundred of them, but not much. And the other thing too is there's a huge market for it, but there's two things. One is the price of those things. If you go on audible.com, I mean, you got to buy an audio book for $20, $18, $19, $20, if not more, not much less than $18. And the buyer doesn't really get anything because it's in the cloud, and so they just download a book onto their iPod or whatever and read it, but they really don't have a book to pick up. So I don't know. I'm pretty happy with what I'm making now with paperbacks and with e-books. Audio, for the amount of effort I have put into it, I don't know if I have time. You know, I know that, I mean, CreateSpace, not CreateSpace, but Audible, Amazon Audio, ACS, ACX, I guess it is. They're wonderful. That's a great, I love Amazon. Amazon is just the master marketers of the universe. And they have a great audio setup where you can share royalties with a reader. A good friend of mine, Mike Dennis, who lives down in Panama now, I guess he made so much money he had to go down to Panama. I don't know. But he was in Key West, and he read one of my books, and we couldn't give the darn thing away. But it's my experience, and so I can't really give any advice to others. You know, I know that you can get into the audio without paying a cent out, but it's a royalty-sharing setup, business deal. You share it with the narrator. They don't do any marketing for you. You got to do all your own marketing, just like you do on your on all your other platforms as well, you know, e-books and so forth. So the only thing I can say is try it, you know. Find your base. I think this is a very, for $18, $20, you're asking these people to pay, your readers to pay. You better have your audience pinpointed. But here again, there's no risk except time. You know, if you go through ACX, there's no risk. You don't put any money out. It either flops or it flies off the shelf or out of the cloud. So I would never dissuade anyone from doing that. It's kind of like on Kindle. I use Kindle exclusively. You know, I know there's Kobo out there and all the other platforms, but man, they are a pain in the butt to work with.
Like Barnes and Noble Nook and iTunes
Kobo,
and
Noble,
all them. Yeah,
you know, they don't pay on time. They don't pay you. You know, it's just a hassle. And so I just stick with Kindle, concentrate on that, get my royalty the first of every month, and I'm a happy camper. So
I noticed that when I looked at your books. Yeah, you've definitely embraced Kindle Unlimited, which was a big change in the ebook world when it came in. And it seems that has worked out well for you.
It very, very much so. You know, all of my sales up until, 3 years ago when they came out with that, they were all hard sales of ebooks. Then they came out with this K-E-M-P, whatever, I don't know what it is, where they read so many pages or words. And now I make more money on that than I do on my ebook sales. You know, it's just like you got a bell curve in front of you that's very, very defined, where my ebook sales dropped off and those KU sales came right back up, if not more. And that's because of Amazon's mastery of marketing. You know, they have these people that sign up for Prime, you know, Amazon Prime, and they can get these books borrow or rent or whatever. And but it cost them. You know, it cost them. It started out as $25 a month, a year, then it went up to 60, then it went up to 95. Now I've heard next year or sometime soon it's going to go up to $125 that you have to pay for a year Prime membership. I don't know for sure. Don't quote me, but I heard that through the Jungle Drums. Yeah, but while I'm talking about rumors, let me tell you something else that I've heard. There are so many books coming into Kindle that the buyers, the customers, are complaining about how poorly written they are, how poorly edited they are, and they want their money back. And so Kindle said, well, you know, they got to honor it and return the money. And so the rumor is that I've heard a few times the last couple of months is that they're going to make changes where your book, when you submit it, it has to pass their editing check. I don't know how they're going to do it or anything else, but I'm sure they're going to do it if they do everything else. So I recommend to every author, make sure your book is edited, not by yourself, but by a professional editor. I mean, I've burned through a lot of editors. When I first started out, I edited my own books. Oh, they sucked. They were bad, you know. I mean, I can't remember, you know, fifth grade English where you build sentence structure, trees, and all that. You know, I don't remember the graphs,
yeah.
So, yeah.
I remember those two, the graphs, edit, yeah.
I hired a graph out of sentence and so forth. But so I've got an editing company now that I love, absolutely love, CLC Editing, Cheryl Castello. Mm-hmm. She works out of Central Florida, somewhere around Tampa, and she is just a sweetheart. And she got a lot of well-known writers, authors. And she doesn't care. She slaps the crap out of them. If we give her a bad book, man, we get raked over the coals. But anyway, I would recommend if there's someone needs an editor, go to CLC Editing, Cheryl Castello, and they'll get a good and very, very reasonable price wise. You know, it's part of the cost of goods sold. You know, but I guarantee you won't get any complaints from readers. And especially if Amazon does come through with some type of a check, an edit check. So that's just a heads up to everybody. You know, be aware of that. It may be coming. I don't know. Next time you're at a show or talking to other authors or a conference or whatever, ask around, see if other people have heard that.
Well, I definitely welcome that because, I mean, that's what I was getting at with the first draft manuscripts being put up on Kindle kind of pattern with the other end of the indie author spectrum. And that has been a big problem because it's shied a lot of people away from buying indie authors books, even the ones that do it right because of that issue of finding too many mistakes and errors. So that is a definite point. You know, I'm glad to actually hear that might happen. So that's good for sure.
Yeah. And it's, you know, people that write, you know, we're all pretty well educated. You know, I can't speak for everyone. I mean, I'm a storyteller. I'm not an English major or anything else. I like telling stories. Thank God I've got a good editor. Yeah, I mean, it's part of the growth of the industry. What do they have, like 3 million authors now, if not more? 3 million authors on... And surprisingly enough, the number one selling books for Amazon are nonfiction. You know, textbooks, mm-hmm. law books, medical books, all this stuff. But then for the fiction, when you start dicing and slicing that down into genres, some of our genres that we write in are very skinny. So you better know what you're doing, and you better put something out that's good, that's a good story, that's edited, has a nice cover, preferably a series. If you write one book, I'm sorry, it's not going to cut it. You need a series. That is the trend. I mean, it's without a doubt, the more books you have, the more you're going to sell. One day you might sell book A, but you're going to sell book D, you know, so every day you have sales. You know, every time you have a new book coming out and you promote it correctly, you're going to have a good first day. If I'm not in the top 100 first day, I'm really, really disappointed. But here again, it takes the time and the effort to get to that point. People have to know your name. You're the brand. They've got to know what your other books were about. They've got to like them. You know, anyway, it's basic business. It really is.
Right. Well, we're coming up on about 5 minutes left in the show, so I've loved getting the chance to ask you some questions and get some you've emphasized some of the things that we really want to see emphasized for indie authors. But I wanted to let Daniel, because he was, of course, the one that you know, I give credit to for bringing you on the show tonight, get a chance to round out tonight. And if Daniel, do you have anything that you were dying to ask Mike on the air tonight?
When we meet up in Killer Nashville in a few months, what type of bourbon do you need?
Well, I had stopped drinking, you know, that like Hemingway said, you know, write drunk and edit sober. So I said, well, if I'm gonna keep this writing going, I just have to stop drinking while I write and edit. But I don't edit my own books anymore. But I'm a whole hell of a lot healthier. My poor liver. That first series, that John Locke series, almost killed me. but I'll buy you a drink for sure. And we'll have a cigar, sit around, we'll talk.
We will fire up some cigars then and
that
sit around
good.
And have a good time there. And besides, you know, Killer Nashville, where can we find you at, Mike?
As far as the the internet, just Google Mike Pettit author, and I mean it pops up all over the place. Are on my author's page, Mike D. Pettit at author.com, Facebook. I'm out there pretty well. I belong to over 250 groups. I'm not active on all of them, but I try to hit at least once a month every one of them. They're just, you know, part of the brand push. Keep your face out there. You know, now that I know about this blog, I'll be listening in on that and passing the word around, of, you know, pushing you guys. So, yeah, just, you know, we have to help each other, too. It's not a selfish business. We need to help each other, especially in the indie world.
That's one thing that we believe in.
Yeah, we don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars to fly all over the country and advertise our books and book sign. I don't do book signings. You know, in a bookstore, I just can't do it. Why would I go out and sell 50 books at a book signing when I can sell, you know, a couple of hundred during that same day, you know, just by promoting on the internet? But I'm around. I hit the mystery writers all there, you know, Thrill Fest and Sleuth Fest, Key West mystery writers. I like that show. Dallas has a couple of good ones every year. There's one out in Vegas. I mean, you could go to a book show or a conference every day of the week if you wanted to. It just depends on, you know, if you wanted to. I'd rather stay home and write books and promote and maybe go to one every 6 weeks, something like that, show the flag. That's what's going on, Daniel. I love your book. I hope you're writing a sequel. I hope you're on top of it.
I'm writing a sequel to it right now, and actually a third book to it. And
that sounds great. You know, I know Michael, your Zeus Warriors book 3.
Yes,
that's out, right? That's out, isn't it?
Yeah, that's out, and right now I'm working on the final book in the series, Kronos Return.
Excellent. I hope it's doing well. Stephen, what's your latest book?
Well, Friday, my newest novella comes out, and I'm releasing one a month. Raiden Valkyrie tales are what they are branded under, and it's called Blood of a Queen. So, yeah, Friday I've got a new one. We'll see how it goes.
Wow. Excellent. That's, you know, novellas are really, really popular. You know, I mean, give a quick read, you know, for busy people. Oh, yeah. I mean, knock out, what's the word count, 40,000 and less for a novella? I think it is, yeah. You know, 25 to 40,000 words. And I think short stories fall somewhere underneath that. But, you know, I'll tell you what I've done. Every day as a writing exercise, I'll do a some type of a short story on my Facebook page, you know, about when I was an orphan or whatever, which I wasn't, but nobody knows that. Well, now everybody knows I listen to your show. But I took, and I did that every week for a year as a writing exercise to get my brain started. So I took all those stories that I wrote every week and I put them in a book and I sold it as Raised by Wolves is the name of it and, you know, fleshed it out a little bit. And it's selling like crazy. It's a biography. So there's a lot of way to make money here, guys. Just look around at your
there
peers,
is.
Your competition.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Mike. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you and definitely want to have you on the show again. With your prolific schedule, you'll have plenty to talk about the next time you join us. So definitely
great.
we want to catch back up with you, and we're definitely going to be following you here forward, the rest of us. I know Daniel has already, but I'm definitely thrilled to have gotten the chance to discover you today.
All right, great. I appreciate it. I really do. Thank you so much for having me.
You're
welcome, take care,
Mike.
And we'll. You have a good night. Take care.
Okay. Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Then we'll be on next week at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with another edition of the Star Chamber Show. So, good night, everybody, and see you in a week.